Well, good morning, friends. This is Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 152A, and we are in the appendix of the Esoteric Astrology book on page 643. These have been somewhat isolated statements about zodiacal constellations and now about the planets. They're taken both from the Secret Doctrine and also taken from a treatise on cosmic fire. We come to an interesting statement here. The tradition of the 70 planets that preside over the destiny of nations is based on the occult cosmogonical teaching that besides our own systemic chain of worlds, world planets, there are many more in the solar system. We have a chain. There's one. Oh, here's another one. Maybe a little better. Coming. Yes. If we had, for instance, in our chain, or in our scheme, seven chains with seven each, we'd have 49. But if there were 10 hidden chains, or rather three hidden chains to make 10 in all, which is an enumeration that is sometimes given in a treatise on cosmic fire, then 10 times the 70 would be, 10 times the 7 would be 70. And we have this discussion of the movement between 10 chains, 7 chains, 3 chains, and so forth. It seems to go from 3 to 7 to 10, and then from 10 to 7, and back again to 3, as absorption of the chains takes place within the scheme, which is a process, I suspect, similar to absorption of the planets, of the planetary schemes into the synthesizing planets. But in this particular case, the planetary logos serves as the one synthesizer. So we might have as many as 70 planets in our planetary scheme, or what does he call it here? He calls it our own systemic chain of worlds. The word scheme is not so much used in the Secret Doctrine, and we talk about the planetary chains, but we have not looked at those schemes in which there are seven planetary chains, or maybe 10, or depending upon the stage of development, perhaps 3. Now, here is an interesting paragraph from A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. It says, the true figures in connection with any planetary scheme, let's see, maybe I make this a little bigger, huh? Maybe this will help. The true figures in connection with any planetary scheme and its occult activity are not ascertainable by the man who cannot be trusted with the significance of the other planetary bodies of great number, within the solar ring past knot. And of course, that gives us the analogy that they're within any seven solar systems, cosmic logos, for instance, of seven solar systems. Those seven may simply be the most prominent, and there may be many other stars with their planets within such a cosmic logos. The entire solar system is full of such bodies, characterized by the same features as are the seven and the ten. Well, okay, wherever there is a seven, we do find a ten as well, and it's the Kabbalistic format. From the point of view of the seven sacred planets in our solar system, we also have the three persons of the Trinity who could be considered to round out the ten. But from another perspective, at the present time, if we include Vulcan, we have ten planets. But from yet another perspective, we have a planet veiled by the sun and one veiled by the moon, and that will make 12, eventually 12 planets to be revealed. of a major kind, and many other planets and planetoids. And each of them in some degree has effect upon the whole. Figures therefore cannot be considered as final until the effect of the lesser planetary bodies on their immediate neighbors is known, and the extent of their planetary radiation has been gauged. There are more than 115 such bodies to be reckoned with. And of course, he has chosen that 115 for a reason. It probably marks 115 of a certain type of body, and then there are more as well. There are more than 115 such bodies to be reckoned with, and all are at varying stages of vibration, a vibratory impulse. They have definite orbits. They turn upon their axis. They draw their, quote, life and substance from the sun, but owing to their relative insignificance, they have not yet been considered factors of moment. Notice he does not necessarily say they revolve upon a center, but they turn upon their axis. So this means that planetoids could be included because they rotate around, they revolve upon around their own planet. This attitude of mind will change when etheric vision is a fact and the reality of the existence of an etheric double of all that is in manifestation will be recognized by scientists. This fact will be demonstrated towards the close of the century, and during the early part of the next century, a revolution in astronomical circles will occur, which will result in the study of etheric planets. Well, there are already studies of planets that emit radio waves, even though they cannot be seen. As these bodies are organs of energy permeating the dense form, the study of the interaction of solar energy and of the occult give and take of planetary bodies will assume a new significance. Certain planetary bodies, both greater and lesser, are absorbers. Others are radiators, while some are at the stage of demonstrating a dual activity and are being transmuted. All these circumstances require to be considered by the initiate who is dealing with cycles. I think what we should do is copy this and put it into the text we are using. Okay, so this is Treatise on Cosmic Fire, 790, is it 793 and 794? And 794, okay. Right, so let's make this smaller, as we oftentimes do, to make it fit into the text a little better. And we'll make this at 10. And yes, and we'll also do this with it. Well, maybe not. Maybe that's too much. Okay. And no color. All right, but one has to cover this. Okay, well, I suppose that did it, didn't it? All right, so that's the statement there about the number of planets, and they all have their attractions and repulsions, and they all... Well, here, you know, I think what I have said before, well, they have definite orbits. Now, it doesn't mean that the orbit is around the sun. This is something that I want to say. They have definite orbits. It may not mean that they have orbits around the sun. Okay. But they have orbits around planets. So are the planetoids included? Do these, all right, I have a little color problem here this morning. So, do these definitely have orbits around the sun, or some of them perhaps around their central planet. Because if the planetoids are included, then of course they will go with their major planet around the Sun, but their first orbit will be around their first planet. There is always an orbit around of a lesser body around a greater body, so that sequential absorption of the influence of the greater body can be achieved by the lesser body. That is the purpose of the orbit. Sequential reception, absorption, assimilation. All right. Now, yeah, it's quite a thing, 115 bodies to be reckoned with. I think we should look in Cosmic Fire for the term planetoids. Planetoids. And there are 7 references. The many planets and planetoids in the solar system. So now, we have to see whether when he talks about planets, he actually does discriminate between planetoids, because it is also possible. It is also possible that by the term planets, he does mean precisely planets, and that planetoids are in a different category, lesser, and having for their center a central planet rather than the Sun itself. So we do see DK distinguishing here between planets and planetoids. A clue to the significance of cosmic evil may be found in the difference existing between the sacred and non-sacred planets, and in the purpose and place hitherto unrecognized of the lives of the informant-forming existences of many planetoids, planets, and planetoids in the system. Okay. So let's just copy that. Not exactly copy. You can't do that with this particular book, but what you can do is you can at least highlight it. All right, let's see what else we have. Human units, egoic groups, monadic lives, and myriads of other forms, objective and subjective, planetary and interplanetary, in connection with the Sun, and in connection with the planetoids. So there are agents of every kind who are concerned with karmic adjustment. And obviously the planetoids are vehicles for intelligences. All right. Certain of the planetoids have a place. Let's see. Here it might be pointed out that there are 3 planetary schemes which hold a place analogous to that held by the pineal gland, the pituitary gland, and alto major gland, but they are not the schemes referred to as centers or known to us as informed by planetary logoi. Certain of the planetoids have their place here, and one scheme which has passed out of activity and is in a condition of quiescence or non-activity. All right, there's a profound knowledge here. I think we cannot speculate. The latter scheme is a correspondence in the logoic body to the atrophied third eye of the fourth kingdom in nature. But if it is, then perhaps there will be a coming back into activity of this, because there will be a coming back into activity of the third eye. He tells us many planetary schemes which are found only in the etheric matter will be revealed to his astonished gaze, and he will find that, as in the body microcosmic, there are 7 or 10 paramount centers, but numbers of other centers for the purposes of energizing various organs. Perhaps we will be discussing this somewhat, as maybe some of these references have been taken out and put into the appendix. As we know, the planetary schemes will eventually synthesize and absorb the life of the planets which are not termed sacred, and the numerous planetoids. All right, that makes sense, because there will be absorption not only of the planets by still greater planets, but of the planetoids which may be involved, either with the lesser planets or, I suppose, with the greater. The circle of planetoids, there's quite a mention of these. Students of the Ageless Wisdom are apt to forget that the life of the Logos manifests itself through those circling spheres, which, though not large enough to be regarded as planets, pursue their orbital paths around the solar center, and have their own evolutionary problems and functioning as part of the solar body. They are informed, as are planets, by a cosmic entity, and are under the influence of the life impulses of the solar Logos, as our greater bodies. The evolutions on them are analogous to, though not identical with, those of our planet, and they swing through their cycle to the heavens under the same laws as do the greater planets. Well, that is the descriptive paragraph we're looking for from 1176. That's the one. So let's add that. Okay. From TCF 1176. So the planetoids pursue their orbital path around the solar center and have their own evolutionary problems and are functioning as part of the solar body. So around the solar center, and some of these planetoids do that and are not considered the ones who simply are related. Okay, we don't want that. The ones who simply are related to the... let's see if I can... all right, let's see what we can do here. Maybe if I turn to black, there we go. All right, and now let's turn to green. Right. So it's not that planetoids only revolve around their own planetary center, but also pursue orbital paths around the solar center. This is important. Okay, and right, there we go. Well, we're learning a lot about our local solar system, aren't we? And planetoids are in a different category, lesser. But as we see, pursuing their own path around our solar center. All right. Yeah, that'll do. Good. All right, let us continue then. It's so intriguing, and what we have to realize is that not all knowledge can be released simultaneously. We may be on our way to planetary omniscience, but can we use in a constructive manner the knowledge we are given? Knowledge is power, and we already see a tremendous misuse of the atomic power that we have been given in the creation of weapons which can destroy the entire human race and many other kingdoms upon our planet, the animals and the vegetables particularly, and work great changes in the mineral kingdom as well. We see that we are still motivated by a misconception as to what our real human nature is, and that the inner spiritual understanding is across the board largely missing. There are, of course, millions of people for whom it is somewhat in place, but this is a very small number when compared to the masses of people who are still motivated by the identity of being a physical human being and strictly that, possibly with the possession of a soul about which nothing is known except that it survives death. We have a lot of educational work to do here, don't we? All right, so not all of this knowledge can be revealed immediately. DK hints at many things which will be disclosed. To give you some idea, you know, about the information in Cosmic Fire, he tells us that by the beginning of the fifth round, there will be considerable interest in such information. It's a long time away. And by the end of the fifth round, all of this will be reduced to textbook form. So here we are in the fourth round, which can be even hundreds of millions of years before the a comparable point in the fifth round, according to the figures given by HBB about the duration of rounds. And we have a book presented to us in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, in which there will not be general interest or textbook form until various points in the next round. So we have information which is not about to be widely assimilated. That is pretty clear. However, there is much in occultism which can be assimilated, just as the four freedoms represent the will of Shambhala and are something that humanity can assimilate at this time, and maybe all that they can assimilate about the will of Shambhala in relation to, I suppose, one of the Lords of Liberation who connects with the concept of freedom. Freedom is in the air right now. And Uranus is very strong in its in the sign which it rules hierarchically. Liberation is a great idea in the minds of many, many people who are trying to throw off the yoke of colonialistic powers, and at least they used to be called that, or let's just say oligarchies and governments that seek to, as they understand it, exploit them and their natural resources. There is a rebellion against these such things perceived. And I suppose it's impossible to fathom the depth of it unless one were deeply acquainted with the cultures involved and actually perhaps born into those cultures and raised with a certain perspective. The spirit of the planet is as much a creator in his own realm as the spirit of the heavens, that is, the form life and the soul life of our planet. So the spirit of the planet, well, sometimes we call this the planetary entity, but sometimes the spirit of the planet is considered to be the planetary logos. We seem to be talking about two different types of creators, and one a heavenly creator, and the other working more in the realm of matter form. See, if we go to the Alice Bailey books and we say spirit of the planet, we will have seven references, and no, the spirit of the planet is actually here considered, in this reference at least, to be the planetary entity, a great unconscious entity working through the outer form. At least there it is. All the involutionary lives, as earlier pointed out, are the vehicles of the spirit of the planet. See, it's when we call it the planetary spirit that we have the perspective of the logos of the planet. And when it's called spirit of the planet, it is this involutionary essence entity who is the sum total of all essences in the process of involution. This is the being who is as yet unconscious and will come into its own in a later system. He holds a position in relation to the heavenly man analogous to that held by the different elementals that go to the makeup of man's three bodies, physical, astral, and mental. And he is, like all manifested beings, threefold in his nature, but involutionary. Okay, so we have tiny elemental lives, don't we? And these tiny elemental lives form part of our different elemental vehicles, which are aggregates of them. And for the heavenly man, let's see, analogous by the different elementals, right? Although he is the sum total of the elemental essences which are serving the vehicles of the heavenly man. So he is a great being. And we human beings have two different kinds of elementals. We have the tiny atomic lives and their various aggregations, and the larger aggregations into elemental vehicles. That should be noted. Therefore, man and the devas, differentiating the devas from the lesser builders, form the soul of the heavenly man. Other lives form his body, and it is with body and soul that we are concerned in this division of our treatise on the thesis of fire. Well, I can understand how some of my friends have been in a cosmic fire group for a long time, and they repeat the study when they finish. One group manifests the fire of matter, the other group the fire of mind. For the devas are the personification of the active universal mind, even though man is considered monastic in a different sense. Man bridges in essence, and devas bridge in matter. So man has here apparently a higher function, as essence will always be, when put in juxtaposition with matter, of a higher nature. Well, we're not going to get off on that, but the idea is that the spirit of the planet is very much, it is the planetary entity. This is the planetary entity, as it is called. And, you know, DK goes on for the involutionary entity whom we call the spirit of the planet, it is simply the third. Hold the key to the first aspect. Okay, well, there are many, many aspects going on here. The horoscope of the planet itself is an expression of the planetary logos. This involves the study of the horoscope of the spirit of the planet, all the involutionary entities and essences as part of a great aggregated life, as well as of the informing life and their joint relationship and interplay. The life, of course, is the logos on the evolutionary arc. The spirit of the earth is to the planetary logos of the earth, for instance, what the personality or form nature is to the soul of man. The two horoscopes are superimposed, and the planetary pattern then emerges. I think we human beings should cease our foolishness, our bad human relations, our addiction to lesser things, and get on with the tremendous opportunities offered on our planet and in our solar system. Life is extraordinary and magnificent, and we are preoccupied with many lesser things, which are served up to us by the continuing power of the mass consciousness. Anything else here that should be noted? There's a differentiation here of the word soul, which expresses itself as a personality, a correspondence of the spirit of the planet. And finally, as a spiritual soul, a correspondence to the planetary logos. We're looking at pretty much the same thing here. Humanity having lost the consciousness which permits contact with the spirit of the planet, the subhuman consciousnesses, and which was the basis of animism, and having not yet developed the consciousness which permits him to enter into the life and mind of the planetary logos, has dealt only with the secondary vision and that, with the second division and that in its lowest. Well, we'd have to trace this back to the point. So, and that's where we are right now, having looked at this on page 644, The Spirit of the Planet. Okay, now we go on further, and let's see what we have. Okay. The seven planets are the sun's brothers and not his sons. Well, they have not achieved the status of solar logos, but they are on their way. And here's the question. Will they achieve this status together or separately? This has to do with emanation theory, as I said before, the aggregation of the emanations, of the lesser emanations into a greater being, or the re-aggregation, as it were. In the secret doctrine, we have them all appearing as comets of different scope, intensity, power, And the sun, apparently, is the greatest of the comets, and his brothers are lesser ones. But those are appearances, and we have to wonder about the degree to which they are part of the same life when on the subtler planes. Suffice it to say, he's telling us that that there are planets are in a way not quite solar logoi. Some of them are actually very close. Maybe the logos of the planet Jupiter, we are told in science, almost became a sun, or at least Jupiter almost became a sun. And what does that say about the logos of that planet? But what is a sun? Is the sun an emanation? Because we are told that these planets are actually the chakras of the solar logos. And if they are chakras, they are monadic emanations working in a vorticular manner through different types of matter. Every vortex has its original motion from a Fohat-like energy, which is part of the monadic nature of its superior. So there is a, let's just say that our vortexes come from our monads. And is it that our, what are our chakras to us? They are part of us, are they not? They are part of our monadic nature. What are the chakras to the solar logos? Are they part of his monadic nature in terms of their origin? But there is a way in which the emanation can be considered a kind of a sun or a ray of the sun. And so we have to compare these two ways of looking at things. In the secret doctrine, these comets appear together, and they are the precursors of our solar system. And is it Maratanda, the name of the sun as he is given, and his seven brothers, kind of eight, appear. Of course, this does not tell us about the many other planetoids and planets, and maybe it is that the seven sacred ones appear as comets with the sun as a comet. However, it appears that the Earth is one of those appearing, and yet the Earth is said not to have its duration throughout the entire solar, throughout the entire Mahamanvantara, as Venus does. There's something quite elegant about thinking that the seven sacred brothers appear with the sun and not the lesser brothers. But then how do they appear? Do they appear as emanations from the lesser brothers in some way and then be reabsorbed into them? And is there a sense in which on the subtler planes the lesser brothers are emanations of the greater brother and yet appear simultaneously with him as if differentiated when emerging onto the physical plane? So this has to be studied means that we do not yet have. What is the real relation of the planets to the solar logos? What is the real relation of the solar angels to the planetary logos? And we've seen how in their aggregation there are going to be 49 groups which will coalesce into planetary logoi in the seven solar systems. So, you know, again, there's a lot that we don't know. We're deeply in the veil of ignorance, and of course realizing that will adjust our sense of values. The planetary spirits are the informing spirits of the stars in general, and of the planet especially. They rule the destinies of men who are all born under one or other of their constellations. Well, we do seem to be dealing with planetary logoi, I believe. Planetary logoi. And maybe I should have this just a little bit bigger. I suspect so. We'll do it that way. are the informing spirits of the stars. Well, sometimes planets are called by the name star. Mercury is called the star of Sirius, or the star of conflict. So the term star does not necessarily mean actually a stellar orb in all contexts. And of the planet especially, they are informing spirits of the stars. So why should they be called planetary spirits unless the stars are themselves in some mode of revolution? Because it's the revolution that gives us the planet. There's confusing language here. We can understand how the planetary spirits will be the formation, will be the informing spirits of the planets in all the subtle grades as well as the physical. But in terms of the informing spirits of the stars, we have to say that that planets are sometimes called stars, or that a star can be planetary when it revolves around a center. So that's another possibility. They rule the destinies of men who are born under one or other of their constellations. Now the term under, so let's see here. It could mean the rising sign, but I don't think HBB is being quite so specific. When one is born under a constellation, that constellation is the rising sign. When one is born in a constellation, really a sign, then the sun is found, as it were, in that sign. So the planetary spirits have everything to do with our destiny, and each one of us is connected with a particular planetary spirit, maybe more than one. We are each connected with a planetary spirit. Planetary, okay. And if we are born, let us say, with the Sun in Gemini, the planetary spirit concerned is Mercury. Maybe if we're born with Mercury rising, the planetary spirit, with the Gemini rising, the planetary spirit is also Mercury. But the non-sacred planets, or let's just say the sacred planets, are not taken into consideration here. In other words, the sacred planets as esoteric rulers, and even the non-sacred planets, and even the non-sacred planets as esoteric rulers, are not taken into consideration here. Well, DK expanded the picture, did he not? Telling us what, giving us greater detail on esoteric astrology. Well, I would say, you know, for me, I would prefer to say, what I would say, I would call them by this name, the stellar spirits, to differentiate them from the planetary spirits. PLSS. Let's try that. Or maybe PLTS. All right, let's see how that works. PL, that's Pluto, isn't it? Okay. PLS. PLS? I suppose that could be something. It may have its place already taken. No? Planetary Logoi is what it is. So PLSS, let's call these planetary spirits, as maybe HBB will be mentioning them fairly often. She seems to use the word spirits, and DK used the word logoi. Each of the planets, of which seven only are called sacred because ruled by the highest regents of gods or gods, is the septenary. And this, we can say that this does stand to reason, does it not? This stands to reason. We are talking about seven principles and the vehicles for those principles. Well, you can say, is it a septenary? Yes. Or is it, I don't know what the name would be, decenary? Is it tenfold? And with every seven, there is a ten, and we can find that as well with the solar logos, which has the seven sacred, but it has the three persons of the Trinity. And we might find that also with planets themselves, who have always the superior three above the seven. And I think, you know, there is a chart which reveals that always the superior three are found above the seven. Here, under the spiritual hierarchy, it's hard to break things down into a seven, but basically they are in this manner broken down. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And the lesser masters are perhaps they are not considered as part of the seven, but as aspects of those seven, or of as constituents of those seven. Okay. The following tabulation is suggestive, and this may, I don't know, this may come from, yes, cosmic fire, sounds like it. God the Father, the first logos, electric fire, the great bear, the sun. God the Son, the second logos, solar fire, Sirius, along with Venus and Mercury. Interestingly enough, two rulers of Gemini, which is so connected with Sirius. All right, and I just noticed the gem in Gemini. it may have something to do, I don't know the etymology here, but the suggestion is pretty strong that there is something of great value that is produced by the second ray which passes through Gemini. We're thinking about the egoic lotus and the great gem that is found therein. God, the Holy Spirit, third logos, fire by friction, the Pleiades, Saturn. Well, this is pretty much as we have been considering them. I guess we have to see of in what context these logoi are occurring. In what context are these logoi occurring? They are not intra-systemic. Because, you know, if we go back to this picture, here are logoi, the logos of will, of love, wisdom, of active intelligence, but they are intra-systemic. They are within the body of expression of the solar logos. However, if we are speaking of the great bear and Sirius and the Holy Spirit, of the Pleiades, these are definitely cosmic centers within the one about whom naught may be said. So I have wondered, does the one about whom have a first, second, and third logos corresponding to the three persons of the Trinity? Three persons of the Trinity. Is this possible? And remember the idea that for every seven we also find a ten. So, and in fact we may find more we may actually find, in a sense, a kind of 14. Because when you look at it, there are going to be three esoteric Buddhas here, and if we count Sanatkumara himself, then we're going to have a 14. So if to 10, you know, let's just say here are 10, we add three exoteric higher correspondences to the Buddhas of activity, and we have the Soto Logos and three others, then we have a 14 altogether. We have a higher 7, basically, and a lower 7. And we may have a picture here of Ray Lords and Kumaras. This strikes me as very possible. Could the Kumaras with the central Kumara represent a higher 7, and the sacred planets a lower 7? You know what I'm saying? In other words, in Shambhala, let's say that in Shambhala there are 7 Ray Lords. They are like 7 spirits before the throne. But then there are the three Buddhas of activity who are great Kumaras. There are three esoteric Buddhas who are Kumaras. And then there is Sanat Kumara, the central Kumara. That's a higher 7. And there has to be then a correspondence with the lower 7. So maybe what we have here is a correspondence to the centers, the 7 centers in the region of the head, and the 7 centers which are considered to be in the vehicle itself. The number 14 is very important, and I think we have a structure here to demonstrate it. The number 14 is very important, and the structure of the Ray Lords plus the Kumaras demonstrates it. So I think I've come upon this idea before, or had this idea before, but I guess I'm formulating it now as if it were new. Now, we're not shown the esoteric Kumaras here, and perhaps by inference we can imagine esoteric persons of the Logoic Trinity, including the Soto Logos. Here, the difference between Sanat Kumara and the three Buddhas of activity is not all that great. They are all Kumaras. They are all holy youths, as it were. We have nothing to suggest that such exists, but there are 7 sons. Okay, so I think I'm onto something here. There are the 7 suns which burn up at the conclusion of the solar system. So can these involve not only the planets as a major 7, but also the, let's call them, solar Kumaras, who surround the solar logos? And I think, you know, that's really an interesting idea. You know, we have these numbers of importance, the 10, the 12, the 14. Why are they important? The 8, Martanda and his 7 brothers, and so forth. The 7, you know, the 6 surrounding the 1. And why are they important? And they have to correspond with certain cosmic structures which are detectable. Of course, archetypally, they may simply exist with the cosmic structures having arisen, because archetypally they do exist. But it's always good to be able to say, here is a cosmic structure or aggregation which corresponds to our belief in the importance of or the value of this number. It's enough, one can say, well, human beings were aggregated in those groupings in early mystery religions, but why? Because they would have to be reflections of some higher aggregations, because the priests are always imitating higher structures as they group human beings. If you think about it, here we have a ninefoldness in the Pleiades, and we have these groups of nine that are being organized by the Tibetan. We have also now the nine paths on the way of higher evolution. Surely there must be a correspondence here, because the Pleiades are in a way the central system, and all the lives which go on the way of higher evolution will probably terminate within the Pleiades. And perhaps these nine lives are very important points in that termination. Of course, this is speculative, and it begins to deal with a kind of cosmic astrology, which is not our province. But still, we can briefly speculate upon possible correspondential or analogical structures in cosmos, and it does draw our conception of cosmos much closer together. There's a more closely related picture, I guess we could say that. The planetary spirit is another name for the logos of the planet, but not the spirit of the planet, who is one of the seven spirits before the throne of God, and therefore one of the seven heavenly men. So in this particular case, logos, planetary logos and heavenly man are considered to be equivalent terms. Elsewhere, those who like to differentiate believe that the term heavenly man is somehow lesser than a planetary logo. Some have said, maybe with justification, that the heavenly man represents the soul nature of a planetary logos, and the planetary logos per se represents the monadic nature. I would have to see references which back that up, but I respect the people from whom the idea comes. So he is on the evolutionary arc of the universe and has passed many stages beyond the human. And some of these may be Mahamanvantaric stages, I suspect. Because the humans, you know, to what extent did we exist in a previous solar system? I mean, let's say those who were born as human beings in this solar system. Well, there never was a time when we were not, but as part of what did we exist? That's the question. The planetary entity is on the evolutionary arc and is a very low-grade entity, or at least not yet much unfolded. He is the sum total of all the elemental lives of the planet, and there we have the statement very precisely given in a memorable way. Is our planet one of the seven spirits before the throne? Are any non-sacred planets to be numbered among the seven spirits before the throne? I don't think so, but in a subsidiary way, they are all before the throne of the solar logos, but the major seven spirits seem to be the sacred planets, the logoi of the sacred planets. But maybe there will be a moving on, you know, and our planet will become one of the sacred planets, and one of those occupying a very high level among sacred planets will move on to another category altogether, and then will no longer be one of the seven spirits before the throne. I suppose the question arises, does a planetary logos in and of itself become a solar logos, or only through aggregation with other planetary logoi? So that is an ongoing issue. The obvious thing seems to say, well, the planetary logos becomes a solar logos, and even a man, one day, treading the path of the solar logoi, becomes a solar logos, the man himself. But it seems that there are re-aggregations along the way of a similar class of entities which make a greater group entity possible. So, does a planetary logos itself become a solar logos? Or does an aggregation or grouping of planetary logoi become a solar logos, just as an aggregation or grouping of solar angels or petries becomes a planetary logos? The mechanism of this, of course, is not easy to fathom. Everything is moving on. Everything that is being retracted along the emanative line is moving on. So you kind of wonder, it makes me wonder, about the formation of cosmic logoi. That they, do they occur in their own right, or are they re-aggregations of solar logoi in some sense? You know, it all has to do with this particular diagram that I referred to many times and has captured my imagination. It is a picture of emanation and also shows how the pattern of re-aggregation work. And at the end of the book, Esoteric Astrology, I guess the way to get to that would be to go to the next book and then go up like this. Well, we'd go to page 635, I think. And we'd have the Tibetan statement, and so the many are absorbed into the one. But this is done in a sequential manner. And so the seven are absorbed into the one, but the one which absorbs them is only one of seven, and these seven are absorbed into another one, which is one of seven, and so forth, until all of the emanations are retracted. Now, when the seven are absorbed into the one, what happens to the individuality of the seven? They are somehow, it seems to me, re-related in a form of consciousness where they actually do or realize themselves to be the one in which they were absorbed. So this question of re-becoming what one is and what one has forgotten, re-becoming what one is and what one is. The one which one has forgotten, and I can make it a little clearer by using a capital there. So it's a question of emanative retraction is what we're dealing with. And the re-becoming of a solar logos, well, in other words, we have, you know, the possibility of either starting fresh planetary logoi as if from an aggregation of solar angels, or we consider that somehow these solar angels are already a part within the sun of the planetary logos, who is itself but an emanation of the sun. But how to combine the idea of successive time units with this picture of a retractive emanation is something which for the moment escapes me. Maybe I can say this, assuming that planets together, planetary logoi together, merge and amalgamate to become a solar logos. When the solar logos itself is retracted and is re-becoming a cosmic logos, perhaps those that have amalgamated together that is, planets who have joined together, are left in the place of a solar logos. Everything moves up one step, and the solar logos is absorbed into the cosmic logos and realizes itself to be that cosmic logos. There's a constant moving up of the sponsoring entity. I call this, well, where am I here? I call this entity, any one, the sponsoring entity. But it's almost as if the seven move into its place. And it, as one of the seven, move into the place of its sponsoring entity and so forth. As I say, the time issue has to be worked out here. In other words, this doesn't occur all at once. There's a sequentiality occurring here, and everything is really a part of everything else. But, you know, how do those who are the seven planetary logo or seven groups of solar angels, how do the seven get the experience of being as their sponsor was? How do the seven get the experience of being as the one? Well, only if this one is itself retracted into a higher one, and the seven are taking the place of the one that was retracted. Now, at a certain point, you know, you have to pull up your emanations. We cannot be forever emanating. During the time of retraction, there has to be the process of reabsorption. So, Well, this is really quite intricate. I wonder if we can make a general statement about it. That on the path of return, the many are absorbed into one through the process of the absorption of septenates into a one which itself is a part of another septenate. There is the experience of re-becoming a greater one which one has always been and has forgotten that one has been when going forth into emanation. I know there is a way to reconcile the idea that lesser beings become greater beings without having to resort to the idea that lesser beings become greater beings who never were before. See, in a way, the function of solar logos is taken over by the seven who amalgamate together enter the state of solar logos. But the being who was the solar logos is entering the state of cosmic logos, and so it goes on and on. I know that's not sufficient, but it gives some kind of idea of how there can be 49 groups of solar petries, and these groups of solar petries, which are probably sevenfold in themselves, amalgamate to become a planetary logos. But in a way, they are related to the planetary logos from whom they emanated. This needs to be put forward in a visual form, and I suppose the closest visual image we have is this chart of the cosmic parabrahm. Well, I think it's time to close this one off. So this is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 152A, and we are on page 644. Again, I don't think we move very far, because each one of these paragraphs really demands careful thought. And now we'll say that we are at the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 152B, page 644. Okay? So we'll see you shortly.